ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Continuing this morning with Canto 3, Chapter 24, right? Yeah. And text number 44. Nirahankritir nimimascha.
Nirahankritir nimimascha.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Pratyak prashanta dhir dhiraha.
Pratyak prashanta dhir
dhiraha. Prashanto mir ivo dadhi.
Prashanto mir ivo dadhi.
Nirahankritir nir mamascha.
Nirahankritir nir mamascha.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Pratyak prashanta dir dhiraha.
Pratyak prashanta dir.
Prashanto mir evo dadhi.
Prashanto mir evo dadhi. Niraham kritir nirmamamscha.
Niraham kritir nirmamamscha.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Pratyak prashanta dhir dhiraha.
Pratyak prashanta dhir dhiraha.
Prashantor mir ibodadhi.
Prashantor mir ibodadhi.
Niraham kritir nirmamascha.
Niraham kritir nirmamascha.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Pratyak prashanta dhir dhiraha.
Pratyak prashanta dhir dhiraha.
Prashantor mir yavadhadihi.
Prashantor mir yavadhadihi.
Ladies, please.
Niraham kritir nirmamascha.
Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik.
Pratyak prashanta dhir dhiraha.
Prashanto mir ivadadhihi.
Niraham kritir.
Niraham kritir.
Without false ego.
Without false ego.
Nirmamash.
Nirmamash.
Without material affection.
Without material affection.
Cha. And. Nirdvandvaha.
Nirdvandvaha.
Without duality.
Without duality.
Samadrik.
Samadrik.
Seeing equality.
Seeing equality.
Svadrik.
Svadrik.
Seeing himself.
Seeing himself.
Pratyak.
Pratyak.
Turned inward.
Turned inward.
Prashanta.
Prashanta.
Perfectly composed.
Perfectly composed.
He. Mind.
Mind.
Dhiraha.
Dhiraha.
Sober, not disturbed.
Sober, not
disturbed. Prashanta.
Prashanta.
Calmed.
Calmed.
Or mihi,
or mihi,
whose waves,
iva,
like,
right.
Udadhi, the ocean. Translation, thus he gradually became unaffected by the false ego of material identity and became free from material affection, undisturbed, equal to everyone, and without duality, he could indeed see himself also. His mind was turned inward and was perfectly calm like an ocean, unagitated by waves. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When one's mind is in full Krishna consciousness and one fully engages in rendering devotional service to the Lord, he becomes just like an ocean unagitated by waves. This very example is also cited in Bhagavad Gita. One should become like the ocean. The ocean is filled by many thousands of rivers, and millions of tons of its water evaporates into clouds. And yet, the ocean is the same unagitated ocean. The laws of nature may work, but if one is fixed in devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord, he is not agitated, for he is introspective. He does not look outside to material nature, but he looks in to the spiritual nature of his existence. With his sober mind, he simply engages in the service of the Lord. Thus, he realizes his own self without false identification with matter and without affection for material possession. Such a great devotee is never troubled with others because he sees everyone from the platform of spiritual understanding. He sees himself and others in the right perspective. This is a relationship between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Is it said Bhagavatam is the graduate study of the undergraduate study, Bhagavad Gita. And the undergraduate study, Bhagavad Gita, is giving principles, and the principles are illustrated through Puranic stories in the Bhagavatam. So the principle described in Bhagavad Gita is being illustrated here by Kardama. There's multiple facets of what he is achieving, and one of the encouragements of Bhagavad Gita, at the same time intimidations of Bhagavad Gita, is the teaching is very high. So it's like, hey, that's what reality looks like. And then maybe the discouraging factor is, gosh, how am I going to get there? In other words, saying the same thing in different manner, we may hear, when we read Bhagavad Gita, some of these same principles. And if we are realistic about where we are and what those teachings are, there's a big gap, and so one can become discouraged. It's one of the fundamentals of teaching. There's a whole seminar on Gita values. And one of the introductory, because when it's being presented to new audiences, while it sounds lovely, it's lofty. And because it's lofty, there may be some disconnect or discouragement or, gosh, how am I going to, too high. So this is a mature stage. And so when we hear these lofty standards, you can say ideals, we must be patient to follow the proper procedures that this, the practices, sadhana, bhakti practices, etc., to get to what this lofty standard is. He's a perfect being. He's not a practicing person like we are. So if we still feel the influence of false ego, not like, oh gosh, I'm a failure. If when you get to the standard, here's the way it's being described at least, is getting to the standard where Kardamuni is absorbed and seeing Bhagavan in trance of meditation. Thus, he gradually become unaffected by the false ego. So what about us? We're significantly influenced by the false ego, but we're also being encouraged to become free from false ego. So maybe we're a failure because we're not there yet. So that's a material notion, like, you know, it's one or zero. Either you're a success or you're a failure. And success is making progress towards the goal. Small steps in the right direction. That's progress. So that sadhana is having faith in the activities of sadhana bhakti can help us get there, but we also need to know what there is. What is the goal? What does it look like? So here's what it looks like. And we're not there yet. But the sadhana bhakti process, and so the essence of the sadhana bhakti process is bhakti. There's things that one can do. And we do those things for the purpose of strengthening bhakti, because bhakti has the power to carry us beyond our shortcomings to the mature stage of bhakti. So, overcoming false ego, nirahankriti, nirmama, you know, a very common terminology in Vedic texts. Mama is mine, and nirmama is no material affection. Doesn't mean you don't have any material possessions, but you don't identify with them as mine. And as soon as you start thinking of something as mine, then there's some attachment to mine. I'm thinking of this little example. In Mayapur, when you go into the temple, there's a lot of people that go into the temple, and you got to put your shoes somewhere. So there was a period of time they didn't have a shoe stand, so people just put shoes somewhere out there in that courtyard, and then you go back after Aarti and look for your shoes. And sometimes your shoes aren't there. I had that happen. And it was like, I'm attached to my shoes. What happened was, one of the sannyasis went out for a morning walk, and some devotee wanted to follow their guru, and so they put on my shoes. And then they left the shoes over there, because they weren't concerned about my finding the shoes. They were concerned about having shoes to go with the walk with their guru. I found my shoes, but this little light went on about, gosh, how easy it is to get attached to something. Some of you may know this nice story of Ramanujacharya having so much affection for one of his disciples who was a grihastha. You know the story? The husband was a body guy. He was a wrestler of the king. And he was totally absorbed in the beauty of his wife. So that one time there was, in Sri Rangam, there was some procession. You know, they have regular processions almost daily. And the deity was going by, and Ramanujacharya and his sannyasis were observing the procession and the deity, and some of the sannyasi followers noticed there was a person across the way. He wasn't even looking at the deity, he was just looking at his wife. And there was some conversation, you know, isn't the man embarrassed? So Ramanujacharya sent one of his sannyasis to invite this fellow to come speak to him, you know, after the procession had passed. And Ramanujacharya said something to the effect of, what was fascinating you so much, you weren't even paying attention to the Lord in the procession, glorifying him. And he said, the eyes of my beautiful wife. I can't take my eyes off her eyes, she's so beautiful. So Ramanuja said, if I could find you a pair of eyes that were more beautiful than hers, what would you do? He said, I would be fixed over there. So he said, you come with me. So he took him to see the deity, Ranganath. And he saw the eyes of the deity, and that was it. He was fixed. So he had, you know, a material affinity, but his material affinity, by the mercy of Ramanujacharya, became transformed. And his good wife, she also followed her good husband, and they became devotees of Ramanujacharya. And some of the sannyasis were, you know, gossiping. You know, he has so much affection for this couple, and not so long ago he was this doting personality. And, you know, we're sannyasis. And so why does he have affection for them like this? So Ramanujacharya decided to teach them a lesson. And the lesson was, you go into the sannyas ashram at night, when the sannyasis are asleep, and you change around their dhotis. Put this dhoti over there, and that dhoti over here, and the one that's over here, over there, and watch what happens when they wake up in the morning. Because they're attached to their dhoti. I mean, they're attached. Then he said, now, go to the home of this couple. I'm going to invite the husband to come see me, and the wife has ornaments. So while she's sleeping, steal the ornaments. And so he did what was said, and the ornaments on her ear, he pulled one of the ornaments on her ear. And then she turned to her side. So he ran. And then the husband came back and said, what happened? Your ornament is missing. He said, well, one of those poor sannyasis, he came and stole the ornament. And when I turned over to the other side so he can take the other one, he ran away. So when this objecting person understood, see how attached are the renowned sannyasis, and see how detached are this couple, the real standard is not what you have or don't have. It's the standard of attachment to the temper. Nice story. So, nirmama. Nirahankriti. Nirmama. near dvandha. We know what dvandha is, duality. No duality. Sama drik, seeing all living entities equal. Sva drik, seeing oneself. So this is the standard. I mean, you know, it's in Christianity. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Or see others, whatever you wish for others to do to you, you do for them. The golden rule. That if you're going to see others as spirit soul, how can you see others as spirit soul without seeing yourself as spirit soul? If you see yourself as spirit soul, can you not see others as spirit soul? You can see yourself as spirit soul and not others. So that's a high position, see as spirit soul. It's not notional. I mean, there's the notional picture of that, but that's all it is. It's notional. And when pinch comes, you know, you have friends and enemies. Pratyak turned inward, this introspective disposition. Now, turned inward doesn't mean your eyeballs, you know, turned around. It means the attention is looking for making the inside clean and pure and peaceful. Because the inward is the contentment, just like the Bhagavad Gita teaching, chapter 5, the happiness within. And when that happiness is within, whatever's going on outside, it's said very nicely here in the purport, whatever's going on outside, it can be this or it can be that, the example of the ocean. It can be waters being evaporated, it can be rivers are sending tons of water into the ocean. And then there's this word, urmi. That last line, urmi. Just like urmila. This is small urmi. It's a wave. And so there's waves in the ocean. It's not like you become a nice devotee and the turbulence of what's, you know, the modes of nature and things stop. That's not what happens. But the disturbance caused by that stops. The waves of the ocean don't stop. The water rushing, the water evaporating, the waves. But the wave, that the ocean remains undisturbed. There's water rushing, there's water evaporating, there's waves. That's disturbance. But the ocean remains undisturbed. This is speaking now of the mind. The mind, it's interesting. When one's mind is in full Krishna consciousness, well, the full Krishna consciousness is not the mind. The full Krishna consciousness is the soul. But if the soul is fully Krishna conscious, the mind becomes Krishna conscious. The mind becomes spiritualized. And then one is not disturbed, even when there's disturbance, which is a contradiction. When there's a disturbance, there's disturbance. It's not that the mind can't read, there's a disturbance. Like, say, you get a bodily pain. It's not like You know, you're under anesthesia and you can't feel any bodily pain when you become an elevated devotee. You can feel bodily pain. Prabhupada felt bodily pain. But he transcended it. Prabhupada spoke of Stalin. We heard one lecture. Stalin was a stoic fellow. He had some surgical operation. They were prepared to give him anesthesia. He said, no, I want to watch. So he watched as they did some surgery. Man was intense. So if Stalin can do it, what to speak of a pure devotee? You know, so much absorbed with intensity of purpose, and if the intensity of purpose is bhakti, because that's from the previous verse, eka bhaktya, exclusive devotion, that carried him to this place where he, all of these amazing qualifications. No false ego, no sense of possessiveness, no material affection, no duality, seeing others equally, you know, pandita, samadarshana. That's not just the pandita, samadarshana. The pandit is not just has, you know, a notion, because we also have a notion that says everyone's spirit soul, but we don't see equally because it's still notional. So when there's a learned person that knows, and not just information wise, but this, you know, has Krishna conscious, when their mind becomes Krishna conscious, when their mind becomes spiritualized by bhakti, then one can not just notionally, but factually understand samadrik. And you live your life accordingly. You can still see what's what. You can still see here's a tiger and you don't go embrace the tiger, using Prabhupada's example. We don't go embrace the tiger. But we still see as a spirit soul. So there's someone doing something harsh. We don't have to like embrace the harsh behavior, but we can see the soul behind and then respond appropriately with the behaviors of the harsh person or the tiger or the whatever or the whatever. So we can still relate to the waves using this other metaphor. But our sense of reality is not resting upon the current configuration of matter. And then that's absorbing your attention because you want happiness and you don't want distress. And so intelligence is launched to make happiness and less distress on the material platform. And that's illusion. And that's what we're accustomed to doing, conditioned tendency is to do like that. So he's beyond that. So, and we're encouraged to go beyond that. And, you know, the method that he's using is not the same method that we're to use. But the bhakti principle is the same. And the form that it takes is different. So it's important to understand the example that he's setting. And that it takes maturity to get to the standard where all these nice things are unfailingly manifest. That's mature stage. And to get to the mature stage, we practice. The main practice goes to the essence, to the bhakti principle, and then we do our practices aspiring for the bhakti principle, to nourish the bhakti principle, accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable, like that, for the purpose of taking full shelter of the personality of Godhead, with the mood that he is to be pleased in all circumstances. Remember, before he went to the forest to do like this, he took permission and blessings from Kapila. Kapila gave his blessing, gave some instructions. He's following them, and he's showing by example what we're to achieve. His mind was turned inward, and was perfectly calm, like an ocean unagitated by waves. It's kind of a contradiction because waves means the ocean is agitated. That's what waves are displaying. It's just like one of the places that I visit in the back, there's a lake. And during different times of the day, there's moods of the lake. Sometimes it's like glass. Sometimes it's just a light wind and little ripples. Sometimes it's splashing. And this and that. It can change within, 15, 20 minutes. Completely different moods, just kind of like the mind. So even when there's waves, the message is same. It's a stage of bhakti that we can aspire for. Because we're in the material world, and sometimes. Sometimes it's very calm. Sometimes it's very turbulent. Sometimes it's light. Sometimes it's heavy. Sometimes. So how to remain undisturbed when it's in the really turbulent condition? Or not distracted when pursuing the material happiness and trying to reduce the material distress feature. The hesitation to do those things is not just a mechanical hesitation. It's a deeper contentment. It's the bhakti principle that becomes matured. That's how to navigate our way through material existence. It takes a cultivation, a bhakti cultivation. One last time. This is Satya Yuga, so what we're to do isn't going to look like this. We don't go to the forest and etc., etc. We do what we do. Stane is to talk Shruti Katam Tanavan Manobhya. This is our teaching. Bhagavatam teaching, Vajitanya. Accept it. This is the goal and the means to achieve it. Stane is to talk. Stay in your position. Shruti Gitam, engage in the process of hearing from qualified persons, and so forth. So that's our standard. That's what we're to do. And will the result look like this? Well, the form won't look like this, but the result will be like this. Each of these, Nirahankriti, Nirmama, Nirdvandva, Samadrik, Svadrik, Pratyak, looking inward, prashantaha, dhira, the mind becomes undisturbed, even with waves like the ocean. Those are symptoms of a mature stage. So that gives us an idea of what's it look like. Any discussion? Yes.
Guru Maharaj. My mind is going to Victor Frank.
To which?
Victor Frank.
Okay.
I mean, his circumstance was like graphic, and he accepted his circumstance, but his consciousness was at higher place. So, but in my life, when small reversal comes, first thing is the fear, sometimes, through magnifying glass, all that. But then, after some time, the instructions come to rescue, and then some consultation. But why? How can I not get disturbed by the fear of this? And the mind is injecting, and directly take the shelter of the instruction.
Well, as you're, two things, as you're asking your question, you know, Viktor Frankl wasn't a sadhaka.
Yeah.
At the same time, he had a service disposition. And his service was service unto others. Let's just assume he had some amount of theistic conception within him, whatever degree that was. So a fair amount of piety, a fair amount of service mood, a fair amount of theistic conception. That is, you know, shelter in God and God's protection, etc. That's not, I haven't read the book, it's not my understanding that that's what he emphasized, you know, faith in God. But he must have had some faith in God. Have that capacity that he had. So, the thrust of your question is the other part. A simple response is, as long as one has the bodily conception of life, one will perpetually undergo, you know, tribulations and be disturbed by them. Be disturbed by life's tribulations, let's say that. You know, payam to tuyam. So that therefore, one has to go beyond the bodily conception. If one wants relief from being disturbed by duality and circumstances that are aggravating and agitating and becoming disturbed by it, one has to go beyond the bodily conception, minimally. And it doesn't happen just by, you know, okay, I'm spirit soul. It's purification. Taking shelter of an understanding of who we really are instead of who we aren't. And so that's cultivation. Bhakti cultivation. Anyone else? Yeah.
Well, in the example that you narrated about Ramanujacharya's disciple, that person was so attracted to the things on the material platform, but it was very easier for him to switch over and become fixed on the transcendence. But it doesn't happen so quickly.
Of course.
For the rest of us.
Yes.
And that strong tendency is there towards attachment to material things, and knowledge is given and steps to be taken to move from that stuck position towards the higher stage is given, but still there is that rebelliousness towards the instructions or the guidance. So is it just like the attachment to the material things is stronger, or is there something else that's going on that is preventing to receive those instructions?
Yeah. The attraction for the temporary is a symptom of yet another principle. It's a symptom of an attitude towards Krishna. That's the root. And the other is a symptom of the root. Something else? Yes?
If there is a disturbing situation.
If there is a disturbing situation.
Yeah. it's not that I'm disturbed because I want something from it and I wanted it to be changed or anything, but being concerned about how is it going and how is it affecting others. So thinking about that, you know, bringing that to the point, to the what I'm disturbed. And also I'm thinking, is it okay to do that or?
To do what? To be concerned and have feelings like that.
Being concerned about that and trying to, take a step to.
Nothing wrong.
The time will resolve everything, so just...
But the danger is false ego. Or, as one devotee calls it, the rescuer consciousness. You follow? That's the danger. So we're not impersonalists, we don't like shut off those feelings. But we're advised to beware of false ego. So then we have to stay on track. And as we're staying on track, the practical result, the net result is there's a mix. So we struggle. Mama vie prapadyante. So that's the solution. To get from where we are to where we want to go. And that's that you have to be aware of. That's what we do, and we avoid the false ego. While we're involved in false ego. So it's the mode of service that rescues. It's shelter taking in Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. Not, you know, your sensibilities. Okay? You know, that's the principle, then applying the principle takes some time in practice. Anything else? Yes? In the back?
On the today's lecture, So it's talking about internal disturbances as well as external disturbances.
It's talking about what and what?
Internal disturbances.
Internal disturbances.
The legs.
Yeah.
And as well as the external disturbances, which is caused by surroundings.
Which is what?
Caused by surroundings.
Caused by surroundings, okay.
Is it talking about both the things? Or
yeah, why not? That's our, there's, we have an internal life, we have the external life. And we can be disturbed internal or external. Take your pick. Or combination. So, the goal is to become free from both. And the short message is, when bhakti becomes awakened, then the internal, just like her question, we see something and, you know, someone's in difficulty. We're concerned. We have some feelings. That's okay. So how do you handle those things? The recommendation is stay fixed in my position is a tiny fragment of a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is his interest and how to fulfill his interest to my capacity. That's the shelter. That's the happiness. That's the ballast that keeps the ship from rocking. Is it clear?
So one more question for yesterday's
lecture. Yeah.
So why it is emphasized on the distress? Distressed lot of distress. Like, when I'm distressed, I'm going, seeking the shelter of Lord.
Well, usually we just deal with, you know, the thing that's causing distress. That's usually what we do. And you, to some degree, we take shelter of God more when there's distress. But there's a fair amount of also of like summoning our intelligence to whatever intelligence we have to have that distress-causing thing subside. Because we don't like the distress. You follow? In addition to taking shelter, our intelligence is launched to take care of the distress cause. Whatever that is. So I interrupted. So you're saying when distress comes, you take more shelter of God. And then?
We are with our families and everybody. So when we go and talk about Krishna consciousness, so they also, like, they know about Bhagavata, Bhagavad Gita. So the first thing comes, because you are so much distressed, so you went there. So we are not in distress, so we cannot, we don't want to go to the, take the shelter. So how to address, because I don't know the answer. So really I'm so much distressed. That's why I came into this consciousness, and I'm seeking this, seeking for shelter. It can be something else also. So yesterday in the Hindi prayers, it started with, because of distress, and we are going for shelter. So how to, like, it's answer to self as well. Like, it's just not the distress, I'm going for shelter. I'm seeking for the shelter. It can be different.
Is your question, rather than just being prompted to take shelter because of distress, how can I be always in the mood of taking shelter, whether it's this or that? How can I get to the stage where I'm simply taking shelter and not becoming complacent when the distress subsides? How do I become steady in shelter taking? That's your question? Well, say it positively or negatively. Once we become matured, so we strive to become matured to go beyond, you know, the on and off, the sine curve. Shelter. Okay, now things are going smoothly. See you later, Krishna. I'm busy. Stress, oh Krishna, so the unsteadiness of bhakti, there's a procedure for making it steady. That procedure, or the stage, is called anartha nivritti. You've heard the term, right? Anartha is unwanted things, nivritti is eradication. Anartha nivritti is a stage of bhakti prior to steady. And what helps the means to get free from the anarthas that are causing the unsteadiness is bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya, devotional activity, sadhu sangha, and the association of sadhus. Sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartha nivritti, steady. So your question is, how do I become steady, not just prompted by distress and then complacent when the distress is gone? The unsteadiness by having the heart become pure, anartha nivritti, by devotional activity performed in the association of sadhus. That's Rupa Goswami's teaching. That's the Bhagavat method. And until then, we will experience what unsteadiness is like. Until the heart becomes cleansed, we will experience what unsteadiness is like. So another way of saying the same thing is, when you see this complacency starting to set in, ramp up your kick yourself in the backside and, you know, let me take shelter of Krishna. Because my real happiness is shelter of Krishna, not just distress becomes mitigated. The real happiness is shelter. I'll say the same thing in a different way. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, there are four types of pious people that render service unto me. You know the verse? Chakra vidha bhajante mam. Jana sukriti. Jana sukriti. Pious people. They take shelter of me. And one of those causes is distress. Pious people take shelter of Krishna when distress comes. And then what happens when the distress goes away? See you later, Krishna, till the next distress comes along. So then one has to move from that position to the position of taking shelter of Krishna in principle. So this is a second answer. It's similar to the first answer, but it's just expressed differently, which is you or I or any one of us have to come to the stage of taking shelter of Krishna because that's who we really are. That's who I really am, and that's what I want to be, is who I really am. I want to be in Krishna's shelter. Not circumstance driven, but self-realization driven. It's who I really am, and that's what real happiness is, and that's what I want to be, is who I really am. And the other is exhausting. And embarrassing. And futile. Very immature, like a child. And I want to grow up. I want to be who I really am. It's important to me to grow up and be who I really am. So that's who I really am. So then it's making a decision, a commitment to be who I really am. And then you can, then that carries you beyond this unsteady. Without commitment, you're not gonna, it's just, it'll keep going. It doesn't come just like, okay, I'm ready to commit. It doesn't come like that. It takes some purification and some spiritual maturity. And that spiritual maturity is strengthened in the association to devotees doing spiritual activities. That's how the two connect. That's part of the anartha nivritti, the eradication of unwanted things. It's attachment to the temporary. Being the enjoyer of the temporary. Last question back here.
Hare Krishna, good morning. Maharaj, I have a follow-up question asked by Ravana Prabhu. He asked why we won't go like by the story of Ramachandra will explain. My question is how to take the baby steps.
How to take baby steps?
to get out of attachment.
How to take baby steps to get out of attachment? That's your question?
How to start.
Nice question. It fits in with our topic for this evening. there's anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. Those are two principles of surrender. So activating those two principles of surrender to begin, you can make a little list on your own or sit with somebody that, okay, here's an attachment or here's some attachments. And what are some doable baby steps? So you brainstorm. This is very practical method. And then you rule some out because whatever the reasons. Then you have some left and you decide, okay, I'm going to work on this one. This is done in our bhakti programs. Like so, just so you can understand that it's not you, it's somebody else, but the same principle. Here's a new devotee. He really likes the bhakti process, but he's got some attachments. So the bhakti leader sits with him and says, because he trusts the bhakti leader, what are some of the things that you're in this world you're attached to? So literally write it down. Out of these things, what's something that you think you could be quite okay without? What's the low-hanging fruit? What's the easiest one for you to do without? So you identify what that is. And then, so you want to go there? You want to like let go of that attachment that you really can be quite happy without? So I'll help you. And then you make a plan. And then it takes some time because it's not just like tossing something in the garbage. Because there's attachments there in the mind still. And you stay with it, with some association that's, you know, you're accountable to, and you do it for some time, and then you celebrate, yay! Okay, let's go back to that list. That's the, you know, letting go of something that's an unnecessary attachment. And go the other direction. What will help me? What are some of the doable things for me to strengthen my attachment to Guru and Krishna? Here's a list of things. What's a doable? Because if I start to do it and it doesn't happen, then I'll think, oh, I'm a failure again. So what's a doable one? And you think about it, you know, for a while. So you're really sure, yeah, it's a doable one. And then with some support, not just on your own, strength of some support, some friend, somebody, a mentor or somebody, and you hold yourself accountable and you take that step, a doable one, and just sustain it. The same principle applied in a slightly different forum is Ekadasi comes twice a month. So what's an Ekadasi Vrata that would be good for me? Something I can do without and something I can do. It helps make the mind stronger to have something that you do on an auspicious day and something that you don't do on an auspicious day. And what's doable? What's sustainable for me? A little one. And then comes, you know, Kartik month. It's another auspicious time. So you think about it ahead of time. What's something? And then you not just one day, but for a whole month, you maintain something. And no, the mind wants to go here and there. You can find all kinds of reasons that I can't do this because. But if you just take a doable one, it's doable. And you stay with it and hold yourself accountable and somebody will support you. And it's not like, oh, I blew it one day. So, you know, get back in the saddle and you continue. It makes the mind stronger. Just in principle. Even a little something, doing that for a whole month, it makes the mind stronger. It's certainly doable. It says weakness of mind. The very fact that you're asking the question, you're 50% there. Because some persons don't ask the question. But to speak of asking the question publicly, not just, you know, somewhere off in the privacy of your home, and wondering, hey, what can I do to overcome my attachments? So there's some seriousness, and the seriousness to pursue it is these other things. And then after successfully maintaining that relinquishing of attachment and further attachment to Krishna, you have a little celebration. And then, okay, what's next? You keep moving, little by little. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.